Today on Bread for the Broken with James Grizzle, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Galveston. Bread for the
broken. Does he allow us to do stuff even though it's not really what he wants us to do? Yeah, he does. Does it always work out well? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But God is, he's so gracious, and even in the Apostle Paul's life. See, sometimes we like to put him on a pedestal as like this infallible man. He's not. He's a sinner. Just like you, just like me. He's a sinner. He made mistakes. Tons of them. Tons of them. Did he always follow God's will to the T? No. No, he didn't. He didn't.
As believers and followers of Christ, many of us can fall into the trap of having an unrealistic view of the apostles. Whether we think that they were blessed with limited access to the Spirit, or God forbid, perceive them as sinless, it's something that we need to be careful of. As Pastor James discusses in his message today, the apostles were just as susceptible to sin as we are today. In his study, you'll gain a better understanding of the grace of God, who even in our decision to act against his will, covers us in grace. Now here's Pastor James in the book of Acts chapter 20 with today's edition of Bread for the Broken.
We need bread for the broken. Give some bread to the broken. We need hope for the hopeless. Give some hope to the hopeless, hopeless. Bread for the broken, broken.
Context-wise, though, we're in Acts chapter 20, and so Paul just comes out of Ephesus. And in case you don't know, there was this huge riot in Ephesus when they showed up, and you know they're just spreading the gospel and got a bunch of bums is a good word, I think. They just kind of hang around in the marketplace and they don't do anything. They don't work, so they got a lot of idle time on their hands, and they're used to stir up this riot. Okay, sound familiar? Of course it does. So, against what the Lord is doing, and eventually this whole riot takes place, you know, across the city of Ephesus, and people are shouting out, "Great is Diana." Diana was the goddess that they worshipped, or Artemis, goddess of fertility, for 2 hours straight. "Great is Diana, great is Diana, great is Diana of the Ephesians," you know, all this like craziness, and then they finally squash that, okay? So Paul is leaving Ephesus. And that's where we find ourselves in chapter 20. I just want to make sure you kind of know, just context-wise. But let's look at verse 1 of chapter 20. When the uproar was over, this is New Living Translation. So see, there you go. I explained the context so you understand the first verse. When the uproar, that's that riot, when it was over, Paul sent for the believers and encouraged them, okay, there within that Ephesus area. Then he said goodbye and left for Macedonia. While there, he encouraged the believers in all the towns he passed through. Then he traveled down to Greece, where he stayed for 3 months. He was preparing to sail back to Syria when he discovered a plot by some Jews against his life, so he decided to return through Macedonia. There were several men traveling with him. There was Sopater, this is going to be fun, me trying to pronounce his name, Sopater, the son of Pyrrhus, from Berea, Aristarchus, and Secundus from Thessalonica, Gaius from Derbe, Timothy and Tychicus, and Trophimus, there you go, from the province of Asia. They went on ahead and waited for us at Troas. There, after Passover ended, we boarded the ship at Philippi in Macedonia, and 5 days later joined them in Troas, where we stayed a week. Okay, so here's just kind of what's going on. We read through that pretty fast, but basically Paul is, they're kind of bringing the mission to a close, all right? This is like a third missionary journey, and he's out there in the Mediterranean, and they're just cruising back. They're heading south. Okay, along the coast is what they're doing. And Paul is getting his team, back together, so to speak, so they can kind of travel back. His goal ultimately is to get to Jerusalem, right? That's his goal. Now, we're going to encounter a little bit of a hiccup within that plan towards the end that I think would be somewhat relatable to us, discerning like, what is God's will for my life, and what if I don't obey God's will for my life, and what is the difference between God's will and his permissible will? Like, does he allow us to do stuff even though it's not really what he wants us to do? Yeah, he does. Does it always work out well? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But God is, he's so gracious, and even in the Apostle Paul's life, see, sometimes we like to put him on a pedestal as like this infallible man. He's not. He's a sinner, just like you, just like me. He's a sinner. He made mistakes, tons of them, tons of them. Did he always follow God's will to the T? No, he didn't. But by the end of this, I think we'll get to see that. You know what? Even for us along our journey, and as you're following the Lord, that there's still grace. There's still grace. And it doesn't mean that even though you may not be doing exactly what God wants you to do, there's still grace for your life. And there's always time to readjust, redirect the ship. But just throwing this out there, they're headed to Jerusalem. And I don't know if it was ever God's intent for Paul to go to Jerusalem, honestly. So we're going to see that. But that's just kind of the backdrop here. That's the scenario. He's getting his guys together. They're going to start heading south, and they're saying their farewell. This is the farewell tour of the Apostle Paul, right? This is, you're no longer going to see him in concert. This is it, okay? So he's saying his goodbyes. All right. So with that, we're just going to move into the heart of this. A lot of this is travel stuff, like it's little journal updates, kind of. On this day, we did this, and we saw these people. But there's some fascinating little stories here and there throughout this journey. Here's one classic example that Paul just pulled out, probably out of several stories. But in verse 7, it says this: on their way down, their way south, the first day of the week, that's Sunday, we gathered with local believers to share in the Lord's Supper. This is one of those proof text kind of things that where we get for like meeting and having church on Sundays, right? Because there's that thing of like, well, shouldn't we be having church on Saturdays? Because it's the Sabbath and that's what you should do. And if you don't do that, you're not right. Well, the early church met on Sundays. And so does that mean all the people who meet on Saturdays are wrong? I don't know. I'm kind of just glad they're meeting, honestly. I mean, you pick a day, I'm like, what does it matter? Honestly, we take these issues and we turn them into these issues. And it's like, no, just, are you meeting? Well, should we meet in a big building? Should we meet in houses? Who cares? Are you meeting? Are you opening up the word? Are you making it about Jesus? Because that's what's key. These guys decided, first day of the week, we're getting together. That's when we're doing church. That was the first church. That's how they did things. Okay. So Paul made it a point while on his way back. He's like, I'm going to stick around for church. That's another good thing. Now, this is hard for me to say because I'm the pastor, right? Paul didn't miss church. Even on his trip back to Jerusalem, he made a point to stay a little bit longer so he could be at church. I'm not saying anything, but I'm saying everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, you apply that however you need to. All I'm saying is this, brothers and sisters, gathering together is essential. It's needed. And again, whatever format or function, whether it's a large congregation on a Sunday morning or it's a home fellowship, brothers and sisters getting together is absolutely essential. We need each other. We need each other. So even Paul, he's heading back to Jerusalem. He's on a mission. He's like, I'm going to stick around for church. I'm just going to stick around for church, okay? There have been many times on my vacations where I did not go. I was like, I could go to church, but I'm going to pass. Like, we've done that. And you're like, oh, how dare you? Well, I mean, it's just how it goes sometimes. I mean, like, you can throw stones at me all you want as long as you're innocent of that same scenario. But I doubt you are. But there's just times where it's like, I'm just tired and all that good stuff. But I will say this. There have been times like we've gone out to California and visit family, and we've been able to go to like a church there and just get blessed by what's cool is like what we do here, people are doing not only in our country, but all over the world, and you can show up and you can be blessed, and it's just like, it's family. And that's how it should be. It should be just family. You can go anywhere and it should be family. Not all places are like that, but it should be family. But here's Paul hanging out with these guys. It says Paul was preaching to them. And since he was leaving the next day, he kept talking until midnight. Well, praise God. You're not at one of those. We respect your time. Now, I probably teach for way too long, but I'm not teaching until midnight. So you're welcome, okay? So if you think I talk too long, just read the Bible, okay? It's right here. Paul's preaching until midnight. The upstairs room where we met was lighted with many flickering lamps. So a lot of candles. This is creating a bad scenario. As Paul spoke on and on, a young man named Eutychus, if that's how you say that, sitting on the windowsill, because that's probably where the cool air was. He had the best seat in the house, okay? Because candles, a lot of body heat, and then the smoke from the candles, it just creates the perfect storm for what? For you to fall asleep during church, okay? It just does. That's why if you're like cold, hey, I'm sorry, but we're going to keep these ACs down because I need all the help I can get, right? I'm just going to keep it nice and cool in here. So the flickering lamps, you know how that is. You sit by the fireplace, the warmth of the fireplace and the flickering, it just makes you want to zone out and fall asleep. Well, this guy does. He says he became very drowsy. Finally, he fell sound asleep and dropped three stories to his death. To his death below. Just so you know, if you didn't catch on, but back in the beginning portion, I think technically in verse 6, that's when Dr. Luke joins the team again, because the pronouns, they change from, you know, Paul and so-and-so to where now it's we. And anytime you see that in the book of Acts, that's when Luke, who was used to record this, he inserts himself into the story. Because there's a portion of the missionary journeys where Luke wasn't present, but now he is, because he's saying we, okay? And so Dr. Luke says, this dude's dead. I'm going to trust Dr. Luke, okay? Because you could be like, well, was he really dead? Luke, the doctor, is like, yeah, there's no pulse. This guy's gone. Yeah, this kid is gone. But look at what Paul says, what Paul does. He went down. He stopped teaching for a second, bent over him, took him into his arms, said, don't worry, he's alive. He just like cradled this young man in his arms, probably prayed over him. He's like, it's cool, he's all right. Set him back down and then walked back upstairs and started preaching again. Left that kid there. Like, I just want you to see this, okay? You're at this church service, right? This three-story home church service, and you're watching maybe from the window where the kid fell out, and you're like, what's going on? And you're like, there goes Paul down there, and he just picks this kid up. We don't know how old he is. Probably a young man, maybe in his 20s. Picks him up, probably says a little prayer over him, lays him back down. It's like, all right, where was I at? Where'd I leave off? Right? And everybody else is like, what's going on? Like, are you kidding me? He's like, no, don't worry about it. He's cool. He's alive. He'll be okay. Well, Dr. Luke said he's dead. And Paul's like, yeah, I know. But God brought him back to life. God just brought him back to life because he literally was dead. That's really what it says there. He was actually physically deceased. No more life. Paul goes down there and in one sense raises a kid back from the dead. That's pretty impressive. I will caution you with this. Don't trust me and my faith that much, okay? So if you fall asleep and fall out of a window, I don't know if I can do the same for you. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be like, what do we do? 911, Lord, please. Yeah, I would definitely pray. I mean, I will, absolutely. But Paul's got, he just has this faith where he goes down there, picks his kid up, and he's like, yeah, he's cool. He's all right. He's going to be fine. Goes back to preaching all night. Insane. It says, when they all went back upstairs, and now this is how my brain works, I envision everybody going back upstairs, and this kid is still laying there on the ground. Like, that's what I, because everybody went back upstairs except for him. So it's like, well, what's he doing? Is he like, I don't know, my brain, my imagination goes wild with some of these stories, but everybody went back upstairs, and they shared in the Lord's Supper. That means that they did communion together. And they ate together. Paul continued talking to them until dawn, and then he left. Meanwhile, in case you were wondering about this young man, the young man was taken home alive and well, and everyone was greatly relieved. What an interesting Sunday service, right? You're just like, went to church, this kid died, and then the pastor brought him back to life, and he just kept talking, like all night long. He just kept preaching. And then that kid went home and he was fine. It's crazy. Can't wait to see what happens next Sunday, right? Like, you got to check this church out. Like, people are dying and being raised to the life. Just a fascinating, interesting, singular story in the mission of Paul, used by God. This didn't happen every Sunday, right? So you shouldn't get into the mode of expecting something like this radical to happen. And if it doesn't happen, you're not disappointed, right? You're not disappointed. But it's just another display of the miraculous power of God. Not of Paul. Paul's just a man. But it's of God who can restore this young man back to life. Now, here's the little bit of behind-the-scenes kind of a thing. Eutychus means fortunate, all right? So if we were to spiritualize this in one sense, if you take a step back and you look at this big picture, well, so he had fallen, much like Adam in the garden. He just fell. He fell, right? And that led to death. Eutychus fell, and that led to his death. And then it was grace alone that restored him to life. In fact, it was new life. So there's this cool little image that's kind of tucked away within that story. You can just read through it, and it's like, it's a cool story in and of itself. But when you look at it, you're like, wait a minute. So here's this kid. He fell, and his fall ended in death. And if that just triggers these thoughts within our brains of like Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve in the garden. Adam, he fell, and that fell led to death. But yet, it was the grace of God that brought back restoration, new life. Same thing that happens with this kid. So in one sense, this kid's embarrassing story, he's going to be the guy in heaven. You're going to be like, Eutychus, you fell asleep in church. And you're like, he's like, nah, I know, but did you, yeah, okay, can we move past that, right? Like, but maybe that's also included within there as a subtle reminder of we've all fallen. That fall leads to death in that sense, spiritually for sure. But yet it's his abundant grace that restores, brings us to new life, brings us back to new life. We're all Eutychuses within our lives. We're all this kid. We're all this kid. The point of that is, so at what stage are you this kid? Are you sitting on the windowsill, getting a little drowsy, you know, falling asleep, so to speak, about to make that plunge headfirst out that window? Are you on the ground dead? You need to be raised to new life? Or have you been raised to new life? And I'm sure that kid goes home with a greater appreciation of the power of God. So where do you fit within that little story? Just an interesting little kind of nugget that's tucked away in there, right? So here's the last part of this chapter. This is a big last part of the chapter, but it all is together. This is Paul's farewell to this church and to these people that he loves so, so much. Paul went by land to Assos. He decides he's going to walk. And just so you understand what that means is, and it kind of says it in a little bit later, but he decides he's going on a 20-mile walk by himself. He sends his crew, they get on the ship, and they're going to sail there. But Paul's like, I need some alone time. I just need to go on a walk. You've ever been there? I just need to go on a walk. I just need to go on a long drive by myself, right? You probably have. If life has ever been stressful, well, I'm sure this year it has been, sometimes you just need to get away, to get alone. And this is Paul's moment. More than likely, this is Paul's moment where he kind of spends that time talking with the Lord of like, okay, so what do you want me to do? I really want to go to Jerusalem. I really want to go to Jerusalem. And we have hints that he has this conversation with the Lord. Maybe a little bit of back and forth with like, no, I want to get to Jerusalem. Now, if we go back to his conversion story, Jesus had told him, he's like, you're never going to be received in Jerusalem. They're never going to hear you. Paul, I'm calling you to the Gentiles. I know you love your brothers, the Jews, so much. I know you have, and he even said in the book of Romans, he said, look, if I could trade my place in heaven, if I could trade my salvation so that they could go to heaven, then I would do that. I can't say, who can you say that about? Who would you be willing to say that about, right? Like, that's insane. Like, no, this person that I love so much, I know, man, if they don't know the Lord and they're destined for eternity, separation from God, hell, I'll take their spot. Like, if you stop and think about that for a second, that's, man, that's crazy. But that was Paul's heart for the Jews. So never mistake it. That was his heart for the Jews. He loved his brothers and sisters, the Jews. And he wanted so much for them to get it. He wanted so much for them to get it. And he desired to go to Jerusalem. But Jesus himself told Paul, they'll never hear you. They won't hear you. That's a hard pill to swallow. Especially when you apply that to our circumstances nowadays. Because you may have family members. You're like, man, I just need them to know. I need to share this with them. I need them to get this. And the Lord may have already told you, they're not going to listen to you. They won't hear you. But it doesn't mean he leaves them without a witness. He already had other people called to them. Peter was one who was called to the Jews. And he got to experience one of the greatest outpourings for the Gentiles of the Holy Spirit. But we know that his ministry, by and large, was to the Jews. You had other apostles that were called and ministering to the Jews, but Paul had such a love for them that he's like, I'm just, man, I would trade places. Eternally, I would trade places with them. which is just mind-blowing. To have that much compassion for the people who are chasing you down every single ministry stop, mission stop along the way, and they're trying to kill you the whole way. And he's like, I love them so much. If we as believers could apply anything today, it should be that heart and that mindset towards our friends, our family, towards our enemies. Do we love people that much, regardless? Regardless of what side of the fence they stand on, and who cares? I think what would be a challenge for us, and what, you know, what I need to learn to get better at, is having that heart for people. And that's just what Paul saw in Jesus. Because we know Jesus came to this earth, and even Paul addressed it to the church of Rome. He said, look, while we were still sinners, while we were his enemies, Christ died for us. He was willing to step in our place. So when we see Paul's heart for the Jews, he's just modeling what Jesus displayed and how he lived out his life, which is how we ought to live out our lives as well. Loving people. Just loving them. Share the God, and you love them by, well, just tell them the truth with love. Be honest. Be real. I would assume that everybody, I mean, there's a weird misconception about Christians and church-going people and all that stuff, that we, like, have it together, or at least we think we have it together, and I'm like, that's dumb, man, I've never had it together, and I'm far away from it, I'm sure. Like, it seems like the older I get, the more I'm like, I'm not even close to having it together. Like, that's a distant dream, right? We don't have it together. We're real people. We have struggles, we mess up, we fall down, we do all the same stuff, but yet we know Jesus. Our eternity is set. It's secure. It's secure. So now it's time to take that, what the Lord has given to us, and redirect that towards people he places within our path, to love people, to care about people. More so now than ever before. What our nation needs is Christians who actually live and look like Jesus. They just need it. Our nation needs that, okay? So he takes his 20-mile walk. The other guys, he says, he arranged for them, for us to join him while we traveled by ship. Verse 14, he joined us there, and we sailed together to Mytilene, or Mytilene, however you say that. The next day, we sailed past the island of Chios, and the following day, we crossed to the island of Samos, and a day later, we arrived at Miletus. Okay, so he's like, we stopped here, we stopped there, we stopped there, got some souvenirs, you know, for the family and all that stuff, and we're just working our way south to Jerusalem. So Paul decided to sail past Ephesus, for he didn't want to spend any more time in the province of Asia. He was hurrying to get to Jerusalem, if possible, in time for the festival of Pentecost. So he wanted to get back to Jerusalem in time for Pentecost. When we landed at Miletus, he sent a message to the elders of the church of Ephesus asking them to come and meet him. What's cool about that, it's the elders, it's plural, of the church of Ephesus, which speaks of a plurality of pastors, which is how every church should be set up, right? It should never be just like this one guy, right? We're like, well, it kind of seems like we just have like just this one guy. Right now, well, no, we don't. We have elders. So, and elders and overseers, technically those are pastors. I mean, it's the same word, and we just confuse things. We do a really good job of confusing what the Bible makes pretty clear, right? So we're like, well, should we call an elder or an overseer? What about a bishop? And all, it's like, it's the same. It's basically the same.
Hope to the hopeless, hopeless, red for the broken.
You've been listening to another edition of Bread for the Broken with Pastor James Grizzle. We're so glad that you joined us as we learned about the early church in the book of Acts together. What an incredibly powerful book of God's faithfulness. If you'd like to listen to today's teaching again or hear more teachings from Pastor James, visit breadforthebroken.com and click on the Teachings tab. While you're there, you'll also be able to learn more about the church behind this ministry, Calvary Chapel Galveston. If you're ever in the Galveston area, we would love to have you visit. We meet each Sunday at 10 a.m. and Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. for worship and Bible study. Our atmosphere is pretty relaxed, so we invite you to come just as you are. For directions and to learn more about us, just visit breadforthebroken.com. We would also love to connect with you. Just drop us a note in the contact form to let us know if you've been blessed by this ministry. Would you also prayerfully consider partnering with us in this ministry? Support from people like you allows us to share the gospel in unique and amazing ways. If you'd like to donate, visit breadforthebroken.com and click on the Donations tab. Any and all donations are welcome and greatly appreciated. We thank you in advance for your generosity in partnering with what God is doing. Our website one more time is breadforthebroken.com. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but be sure to tune in again next time as Pastor James teaches more from the book of Acts right here on Bread for the Broken.
Let me paint the picture of humans, the one love there.